Each month on the Restoration Home podcast, we are focusing on a different spiritual discipline, and these are all based on my new book, Habits for a Sacred Home. This book is about 9 practices from history that can anchor and restore modern families, and we'd love to help you do this with intentional questions, featuring amazing women of faith, and even an extra book list at the end so you can continue your learning about these habits of life that can bring more peace and connection to your family. So grab your copy at habitsforasacredhome.com. We'll link this in the show notes so you can get started on building a rule of life for your family today. This is Jennifer Pepito with the Restoration Home Podcast. This is the show where we talk about the peaceful path to connected families and restored communities. Today on the show, I'm delighted to be chatting with Christy Purifoy. She's on Instagram at Christy Purifoy, and she's the author of these beautiful books about gardening. She has a new one called Seed Time and Harvest, How Gardens Grow Roots, Connection, Wholeness, and Hope. And this show in so many ways is about how homes can grow roots, connection, wholeness, and hope. And so I love that we have this shared value for some of the simple things in our life and the power they have to really shape our families and to bring hope to our communities. So thanks for joining me today, Christy.
Oh, you're so welcome. And I am so glad to be here. And I too see so many connections between the work that you are doing and your mission to connect renewal in the family to renewal out in the world and in our communities. And that's what I'm all about as well. And I think the garden is a part of that. And it has been for my family. So I think we're going to have a great conversation. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Oh, I'm excited. And I'd love to have you, just for those who have not met you yet, I'd love to have you just kind of give a quick introduction.
Sure. Well, yes, Christy Purifoy. I live in southeastern Pennsylvania in an old farmhouse. We've been here a little over a decade, have raised 4 children here. I'm in that in-between stage of kids leaving home, a few more still at home, teenagers, all of that. And I've been a writer as well for quite a few years. My background was in academia, so literature. I was going to be an English professor, and I did that for a very short while before God called me to lay that down and write. And it has been a real joy to write books and be able to just be home with my kids, grow a garden, and have creative work I could do at home. So that's what my life has looked like the past few years. And I'm as surprised as anyone that I somehow stumbled into garden writing. I do not have a background in horticulture. I never even liked science as a kid, but I love beauty. And gardening allows us to literally cultivate glory all around us. And so it has been an important part of my life and my homemaking and our family life for quite a few years now.
I love that so much. You know, my new book, Habits for a Sacred Home, is based somewhat on the Benedictine rule. Mm-hmm. And part of what I loved about reading about the Benedictines and the monastic movement is that in the midst of chaos, they were cultivating these very peaceful places. And if you've ever visited, like we visited a Catholic church in Jerusalem, and the grounds there were just so beautiful. The gardens were so beautiful. And some of the missions that we visit in California have just these beautiful gardens. And there is such a sense of God's presence in a garden. I mean, time began in a garden. And I know for me, when I'm out working in my garden and a hummingbird flies close to my head or a ladybug lands on me, I'm like, oh, God loves me. God loves me. And, you know, I wanted to just hear from you, like, how does spending time in nature create more awareness of God? Because we're in a month of talking about the rule of life regarding prayer. And I think gardening can be a form of prayer.
Oh, absolutely. And I love that you've been focusing on the Benedictine practices and the rule of life. I actually, I was newly married, but before I had kids, I spent 2 years working out of a Benedictine monastery in Virginia. I was working for one of their nonprofits, but I was working very closely with Sister Eileen there at the monastery. And we had a little office in the monastery. And every day she insisted that together, even though I and the other young woman working for her were not Catholic, we joined her and the other sisters for noontime prayer. And on our way to and from prayer, she always had us walk through the garden. They had this beautiful courtyard garden, and we would notice the birds and what was blooming, and then we would go to prayer. And it was almost one seamless experience that she was offering us. And it was so eye-opening to me. And it's true. I think the garden keeps such a rhythm, and prayer can become such a sustaining rhythm in our lives, like a better kind of clock, a better way of keeping time, a better way of staying connected to the people we love and the world around us and to God. And the garden does that as well. It is so much about time and about seasons and about waiting and about anticipating. And those rhythms are prayer rhythms too. So I feel like I learned that as well from the Benedictines.
Yeah, I really love that experience that you shared, you know, and I think so many of us, like I'm an evangelical or a Protestant Christian. I don't necessarily call myself that, but I have gone to churches that are not Catholic. But there is a sense in reading some of that old literature, some of that medieval literature, or reading, you know, the Rule of Saint Benedict or some of the kind of ancient saints, that they had a little bit more of an awareness of how the natural world can be a way of learning about God and a way of even understanding more about the spiritual life, you know. And your book is called Seed Time and Harvest. And I know with children, a lot of times we're sowing prayers that we will have to, you know, I've talked about this analogy. It's like, we need to have nerves of steel as mothers because we're sowing prayers and we aren't necessarily seeing the harvest of those prayers immediately after you pray them. And how has, you know, spending time in a garden, even how has that helped you have faith for the prayers for your children, even when you're not seeing the answers?
Yes. I think one thing that gardening has just, sunk, this truth of gardening that has sunk deep down into my body almost, because I've lived it out now for so many years, is this sure knowledge that really nothing happens like that. You know, click of the fingers, hit the button, turn it on, go. Things grow. Things take time. That is how God has chosen to work in the world and in our lives. And so I know when I plant that seed, there will be a process that starts, but I will watch it play out over time. And it can be beautiful because it's really, it's like a work of art. You know, you think of music as art that plays out over time, and the garden is that way too. And so when you live according to that more patient time that God keeps, you know, that earth time, that creation time, it makes sense that that understanding would flow into other areas of your life. And so I think many of us would know raising children, parenting, mothering, is a lot like cultivating a garden. We don't control outcomes. We do our best. We show up. We know there's work. We know it will take time. But we don't control, you know, I don't control my garden at all. There's so many factors. And ultimately, it is God who causes my garden to grow. And absolutely, that is true for my children as well. But as well, the rhythms of the garden repeat. They just circle back every year so beautifully. And so in some sense, it's happening on a much shorter timeline than the parenting. And so every year, I have that absolute reminder that things die, they go to sleep, and then they wake up again, and life is renewed. And I live it out year after year. And I think that builds in us a kind of resiliency and a patience, but just this deep hope. And so, yes, in this latest gardening book that I'm releasing, just in March, Seed Time and Harvest, it ends on that hope that I have received through gardening, that ultimately it gives me hope for every aspect of my life, my parenting, you know, my future with God, the future of this world, even. I mean, our world is so troubled and so broken. And yet the garden and what I see God doing there gives me real hope. So yes, I have hope for the world and I have hope for my children. And it's rooted in God, but it's something that I have witnessed over the years in my garden.
Yeah. That's so beautiful, just the way you describe that seed time and harvest concept, where there is always hope. There are quiet times where it seems like nothing much is happening. And I think so many of my listeners are homeschool moms, and they want to do like a Charlotte Mason education, where you read beautiful books to your children and you listen to their narrations, but they get scared in the early years because they can't prove a bunch of learning. Like, you're not filling out a bunch of workbooks when you're reading these life-giving stories together. And so they give up and they go to a more like workbook heavy form of education where you can prove learning, but really nothing's getting down very deep. And it's almost a similar that homeschooling and raising children, gardening, life, it requires this level of faith that many of us haven't yet cultivated. Like, we do sometimes expect instant results and have a hard time just waiting in peace. And I think, you know, part of that is learning to believe that God is good. Mm-hmm. So many of us had maybe parents who weren't very loving or very present. And so we actually have a hard time believing that God is loving and present and trustworthy. How has waiting on some of your prayers to be answered developed that peace or that trust in God?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great question. You know, I speak from a somewhat privileged position in that I have older children now. So my oldest is in college. She's 20. I have one graduating from high school, two more after him. And so I have the real privilege of being able to look back at my journals and my notes. I have not always, but occasionally, I use a little index card system. So over the years, I have an index card for each of my children. I've added to them over the years. But I can go back and flip through those cards and I can see the prayers that I have been offering over the years for my children. And what I see blows my mind. So many things are still uncertain. So many things, let's just say, unanswered, or I don't know what to say about it. But throughout these cards, throughout these journals, I can point again and again to these prayers that I would say, on the one hand, yes, God listened to me, God heard my prayer, but also I think God gave me that prayer. So I can look at the prayers that God gave me for my children, and I can say, wow, Lord, you've done it. You're doing it, like very specific things. And that isn't something I necessarily had in those early years of parenting. I had to take that on trust and I had to write these things down and I had to sort of cast my cares upon God. So I offer that to the moms who are listening who have younger children, or the moms who have, and I've been this mom as well, who have older children who are really struggling. It is hard to grow up. It is hard to be a teenager in today's world, and personalities come into play, different family dynamics, and those can be years of real struggle for moms and their kids. And I have been that mom as well. And so I think mostly if I could say anything to moms listening, I just want to say, don't give up. Don't lose hope. God can work miracles and God is listening to your prayers. And you can listen to God as well. You can say, Lord, what prayers are you giving me? And then let me be faithful to keep praying those things with you. There is a harvest at the end of it. And it feels always partial and incomplete because it is, you know, we're still living. There are more seeds to sow, but those answered prayers are not insignificant. And I just testify to them. And I say, have hope.
Yeah, that's so good. I mean, my oldest is 30. And so I also have gone through some parenting seasons where I was like, this is not what I thought I was sowing. Do you know what I mean? Yes. This is not what I thought the flowers would look like when they bloomed. And yet, you know, God is so good. And as we just wait on him and trust in him, and I've seen, you know, especially in this most recent season, some prayers from my children have been answered really beautifully. But partly I had to turn away from worry and control and just let a lot of it go and focus on God in a new way. And I've been using the John Eldridge 30 Days to Resilience program. Every day you wake up and you say, God, I give you everyone and everything. And I've said this a lot of times on this podcast because it's such an important prayer for mothers. Like, we have to know that God is so good and he will keep our children. He loves them more than we do. But you know, one of the things that really has been a blessing in our home, and one of the things I talk about in Habits for a Sacred Home, like, we can't control the outcome, but there are steps along the way that we do to sow the seeds. And, you know, for instance, for us, while I was homeschooling the whole family, we would have our morning time every morning. We would pray together. Sometimes we would sing hymns. Sometimes we would just put on some worship music, but we always dedicated some time in our day to the Lord. And as my last two are now taking some charter school classes, we're in California, and so I can outsource, you know, math and robotics, things that I'm not a good teacher of. But we still make sure that we have some Bible time every day, or pray the Lord's Prayer at the very least, so that we're continuing in a way to sow those seeds. And I think a lot of families almost let go of discipling their children or praying with their children. It's like they kind of think it's just this personal thing, and I'm not going to subject my children to my beliefs. And yet you, in that, when you were working in that monastery, even though you weren't Catholic, you still participated in the prayers of that house because that was the custom of that house. And I think as mothers, we can look at our homes almost like a little monastery. And, you know, this is the vision I present in a way, is that we are like the mother abbot or abbess of our little home monastery. And so if we want to call our children to prayer once a day, we have the authority to do that.
That is beautiful. That's such a wonderful way to look at it. And as well, we know the Benedictine value on hospitality. It's so hospitable. It is hospitable to our families and our children to share that gift with them. That's what I felt, that welcome and that hospitality when I was welcomed into noonday prayers with the sisters. And how wonderful to think that we can offer that to our children.
Oh, I never even thought about it in terms of hospitality, Christy. That's a really sweet idea. Because I think sometimes as moms, it's like, I don't know if it's shame or just a lack of confidence, but there's a sense of letting go, I feel, too early, especially with teenagers. Like, they still really do want to have a relationship with us. And maybe having a relationship with them will mean that we have to do the things that they like doing, like, you know, throw a ball in the yard with them, or take them on some kind of an outing that's exciting to them. But I think there, you know, just like in Deuteronomy, it says that we'll talk about these things as we rise up and as we lie down. It doesn't have to be this, you know, formal hour of prayer or something. But as we're driving to school, just speaking a blessing over our children, or as we're, you know, on an outing with them, talking to them about what it looks like to live as a Christian in a boyfriend-girlfriend relationship, just continually turning the conversation in a natural, loving way towards the Lord is part of how we cultivate these sacred homes.
It's a privilege, isn't it? It's so good. And I love that caution. I completely agree. And I feel it in my heart to not let go of our teens too soon. And I felt like if you told me that before I had teens, I would have thought, what are you talking about? I'm going to cling to my kids so hard. But the reality of raising teens is very different. And it is tempting to They seem so independent, and they're pushing away, and it is tempting to just let go more and more, and not risk an argument, or not, you know, not try to hold them tight still to some of the family practices. But finding that balance of holding on and letting go, that's a good encouragement. Thank you for that.
Yeah. And I actually just heard a father and his daughter share in a class setting. And it was really sweet to listen, because this daughter actually went to another church when she was a teenager. She kind of made some of her own choices in a sense. But she said that watching the way her parents lived out their faith was a big part of what inspired her to, you know, she's pursuing ministry in a sense right now. And I think that we often underestimate even just our own lifestyle. Like as you are working in your garden and loving God and being a good neighbor, there's a lot that is caught by our children just from watching us aside from our direct teaching.
It's true. Actually, it reminds me in this book, Seed Time, I write about the fact that my garden actually catches children. So my own children, but also the neighbor children, there's something about having a garden full of flowers where butterflies are flying around, or in my own yard, there's been a little corner of the yard where we had some apple trees, and the apple trees were just a magnet for kids coming to pick fruit, a magnet also for animals, groundhogs, deer. But there's something about a garden that is, it's a place of life and it attracts life. So I feel like quite literally I've experienced that sense of children just sort of getting stuck into the spaces around our home during spring and summer and fall. And I'm so grateful. It's so beautiful to see. It just has made it a little less likely for them to dash off to, you know, the neighbor's house. The neighbors have tended to come to us, which I appreciate.
What a beautiful place that you are cultivating. And I know that in your Instagram bio, you have a title of placemaker, and it's really lovely to hear how that's kind of playing out in your life. And I would just love to hear, you know, it's spring right now as this is coming out, and so many moms would love to cultivate more beauty in the outdoors around their homes and maybe do a little bit of gardening. Like in the Peaceful Press resources, we have a lot of prompts for, you know, plant some potatoes in a bucket or plant a pollinator garden. And yet I think moms can get really intimidated by that. What helped you just get started as like a total newbie gardener?
Yeah, I think, well, first of all, I was invited. A friend just invited me to share a spot in a community garden with her. I don't think it would have occurred to me otherwise. And so sometimes it's that invitation or it's the friend. So if you know a gardener, or you know someone who seems to have life growing around their home, you know, just reach out. I mean, gardeners, oh my goodness, if anyone nearby reaches out to me to ask about gardening advice or gardening help, or could I share some plants? I mean, we love that so much. We live for it. So reach out to people around you. But I think what it looked like for me is just trying. I just kept trying, and you will fail. I think you have to know I will kill things. Plants will die. And to know that that is okay, because that is how we learn. It is actually the best teacher, because your little bit of earth, whether it's a pot on a front stoop or actual land, is the only, it is unlike any other, it is utterly unique on planet Earth. And so all the experts, all the internet sites, all the gardening books, they don't know your pot. They don't know your backyard, but you do. You can get to know it. And really that's all gardening is this intimate relationship with one place. And we get to know it through trial and error and just seeing what works and looking around at our neighbors, what are they growing, and talking to the guy at the garden store. But it can begin with just a packet of seeds. So one of my sisters actually got into gardening before I did. And when I moved for the first time to a house with a yard, and I was complaining, oh, there's only just some green bushes, she said, Christy, just throw some zinnia seeds on the dirt and see what happens. And that really was the beginning. Because flowers grew, and I was in awe. Oh my goodness, how did this happen? So it might be that easy, you know, get a packet of zinnia seeds or cosmos seeds this spring or summer, scratch them into the dirt. And as long as you keep them damp until they germinate, until they start to grow, then you don't have to worry about them after that. But just keep them damp till they sprout. And then, you know, worst case, nothing happens. Best case, you have cultivated beauty and glory right where you are, and your life will never be the same.
Oh, it's so beautiful. There are so many little things that we do as mothers, you know, keeping a library, planting some flower seeds that have an impact for our children and ourselves, but they also serve as such a beautiful example to the rest of the world and even to the natural world. To the butterflies and the bees who are looking for pollen. It's just such a gift. So Christy, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom today. I've really enjoyed getting to chat with you. We'll link your book, Seed Time and Harvest, at ChristyPurifoy.com. We'll link your Instagram in the show notes. Is there anything that you want to share before we say sayonara for today?
Oh, I've so enjoyed being here, so enjoyed chatting. I welcome garden questions online, so send them my way. But I encourage you, if this is something that is just niggling in your heart, like a little desire for more life or more beauty, don't listen to the lie that it's self-indulgent or that you can't afford it. I think God delights in us when we become gardeners, because he created this abundant, beautiful world for us, and he will meet us in that. So I wasted too much time thinking, oh, maybe this is a waste of time, or it's a waste of money, or it's not practical. Some of the best things in life are not what we call practical, but they are good gifts from God. So I just encourage you and bless you in your gardening this spring.
Thank you so much, Christy. What a beautiful conversation.